This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica affiliates, and watch us on Free Speech TV, Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Water protectors at Cannonball, North Dakota, were attacked brutally by a large formation of well-armed police on Sunday night, who targeted them with water cannons, tear gas, and rubber bullets. More than a dozen people were hospitalized with injuries and hypothermia. One person reportedly suffered a heart attack. The indigenous-led movement was attempting to unblock a public road when police attacked. There have been solidarity protests against the Dakota Access Pipeline all over the country. Last week, the Army Corps of Engineers released a statement saying that, quote, additional discussion and analysis are warranted in light of the history of the Great Sioux Nation's dispossessions of lands. My guest is Nick Tilson. He is the executive director of the Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation and a member of the Oglala Lakota tribe. Welcome to the program, Nick.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So we had you on some months ago as we've been covering the story. You are there in North Dakota right now. Can you tell us what took place on Sunday night? Were you there?
Yeah, I was there. What took place on Sunday night was we've been wanting to remove this blockade because they basically have us, all the water protectors, blockaded using blockades on public roads so that we can't actually get to the easement, and we can't actually get to the pad to protest the construction.
What are they being blocked by?
There was two dump truck vehicles that looked like they were dump truck vehicles for the National Guard. And on October 27th, it was unclear, but somebody had lit those two trucks on fire, and so they had used those two trucks as a blockade, with Jersey barriers behind them and razor wire behind that. And so we've been wanting to have access to this public road so that we can protest the pipeline coming in and protest the drilling of the pipeline because the company doesn't have the permit. And so they've been blocking this public road. And the other thing is they haven't been looking at us like human beings because they're standing behind these vehicles. So they're not looking at us eye to eye. And so the strategy to remove these burnt out vehicles was so that they could start seeing us like people again. And they can start looking at us in our eyes like people again, because we eventually want full access to the road so that we can practice our rights and protest the drilling of the Dakota Access Pipeline underneath the Missouri River.
And so what then did the police do? The photos that have come out of what happened on Sunday night show a very long line of police with their tanks that look like they might belong in Iraq or some war zone, and massive water cannons. And I understand Sunday night was extremely cold there.
Yeah, last night it got down during the times that the protest was happening. It was about 25 degrees, so it was below freezing. They had water cannons that they were unleashing on people. We successfully removed one of the burnt out vehicles, and then attempted to remove the other one. They used tear gas on people. They used concussion grenades on people. They used the water cannons. They used pepper spray. They used every single thing that they had in order to try to defuse the protesters and to stop us from moving those vehicles.
And there is some remarkable footage that is available of what has been happening, what took place on Sunday night. Independent journalists have been there. Someone was able to fly a drone carrying a camera, so we got really good aerial footage, which our TV audience can see right now. The Morton County Sheriff's Department said that they weren't using water cannons on protesters. They were simply trying to put out the fires that were caused by, quote, rioters. How do you respond, Nick?
No, that's 100% incorrect. If there was any fires that were ever started, it was because they had thrown, there was two fires that started last night, and it was because they had thrown tear gas, and they threw tear gas into us, and it landed in the grass. So those were actually these really small fires that got put out right away, but they had started those fires. And 100% absolutely, they were using water cannons on people. I mean, if you look at the footage, they're spraying people directly. Some people were going into hypothermia because of how cold it was. They were definitely using the water cannons as a way to attack the water protectors that were there.
And as far as you know, what have the injuries been? I saw one report that said 17 people had to be hospitalized. One person had a heart attack. Do you have anything more? Can you tell us what you might have witnessed personally?
Yeah, I don't have the exact numbers, but I witnessed people that had people were shot right in the eyes with rubber bullets. Some of the concussion grenades or sound grenades that were sounded off. Somebody had one that was blown up right close to their chest. There was a lot of people who suffered from a mixture of the pepper spray and the tear gas. They unloaded all kinds of rubber bullets on people to the point where people had to have face masks and shields just to protect themselves. And it was very gruesome, and it was very violent, especially for water protectors that were just standing up for their rights and trying to have our opportunity to express our opposition to the Dakota Access Pipeline on a public road. That's the other thing, is that they kept telling us we were trespassing on a public road that they had blocked. And so it was pretty gruesome last night. I think that the scary part was, I think the water cannon was going probably for about 2 hours nonstop.
Wow. And 2 hours?
Yep.
Did you get drenched too?
No, I had an injury in my leg, so I had to stay back by the bridge. And so I got to see the full perspective of what was happening. So we had one concussion grenade, or whatever they're called, the sound grenades that they throw. One of those landed right above where my head was. And then they unleashed a lot of rubber bullets on a lot of the protesters too.
Nick, the last time we had you on, it was right around another attack that the police had carried out, and also them accusing water protectors of being armed. What happened on Sunday night? What does that represent from the perspective of this ongoing action that stretches all the way back to this past April? Does what happened on Sunday represent a new escalation, a new and much more dangerous escalation, or more of the same?
It's a mixture of both. I think that, to this date, no water protectors have been arrested with weapons. Even though they keep telling that story over and over again, that we have weapons, that we show up violent. When violence is inflicted upon us, that's them being violent, not us. And sometimes that gets switched around in the media. But in the midst of all the chaos and madness that was happening yesterday, you only had water protectors that were protecting themselves. You had people that were praying. You had people that were smudging. You had street medics that were getting people out that were injured. None of us had any weapons. When tear gas canisters were throwing at us, there was some people who threw the tear gas canisters back at the police. But for the most part, this was a peaceful protest in which violence was being inflicted upon us. And I think this represents an escalation, by the National Guard and by Morton County, that they're really willing to use every tool at their will to suppress water protectors who are standing up for their rights and trying to do the right thing. And so I think the escalation is by them. I think for us, the thing that we keep talking about and keep explaining is that as Indigenous people, we're not victims, right? That this is terrible that's happened. But as Indigenous people, we're strong, powerful people, and we just happen to be taking on, multi-billion-dollar corporations that is trying to exploit our land, exploit our rights, destroy our sacred sites. And so this is us standing up for ourselves. But we were doing it in a peaceful way, and that's the thing that needs to be interpreted, is that when violence is inflicted upon us, it's not us being violent; is them being violent against peaceful people who are standing up for their rights.
Now, Nick, a number of people over the past several months have been charged with felonies. That was a new weapon that the police and authorities began using against activists and water protectors, that when ordinarily they might have simply been charged with misdemeanors for the kind of political activism they're engaged in, they were being charged with felonies. What has come of that?
We've seen a handful of the felonies get dropped, particularly the ones on October 27th. They dropped over 100 felonies because there was no way they could prove. It's when they removed the people from the North Camp. And other folks, we've seen a mixture. We've seen some folks that actually locked down to machinery who have gotten their, at the preliminary stage, have gotten their felonies dropped. Others that are actually going to trial. In my particular case, we have a preliminary hearing reset up for December 12th. So we're seeing a mixture. It's really depending on what judge you're getting. I also think that the political climate that is happening out here is going to have, it's probably going to have a big impact on the way that these judges rule. But for the most part, so much of the felonies is a way to intimidate water protectors. And so for me, I have a strong belief that mine and the folks that were with me, that their felonies are going to get dropped over time, because it's pretty ridiculous to be charging individuals for felonies for the type of peaceful actions we've taken.
Now, what about the Army Corps of Engineers statement that just was released on the 14th of November, where they basically said that the Army has determined that additional discussion and analysis are warranted in light of the history of the Great Sioux Nation's dispossession of lands, the importance of Lake Oahe to the tribe, our government-to-government relationship, and the statute governing easements through government property. It sounds like the Army Corps is saying we need to stop, and at least temporarily, and decide what to do next. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Army Corps of Engineers, and I think that Department of Justice and Department of Interior, other agencies, including the Army, understand that this is an indigenous rights struggle. This is a struggle about indigenous sovereignty. It's not just solely about the environment. It's not just solely about the climate. It's about indigenous people's rights and how systematically, over time, the systems that have been in place don't actually help protect and preserve indigenous people's rights. For example, like the consultation process, it is pretty ridiculous to go to a tribe and say, you know, before we rape your land and before we steal everything, before we destroy these sacred sites, we're going to consult with you first. And so part of what we're saying is moving into this new generation of that Indian policy on issues like this should be prior informed consent, so that in the future of infrastructure projects like this and oil and gas projects like this, not only did they have to consult with tribes, they have to get the consent with tribes because we have sovereign rights and we have rights that are tied to our treaty territories, like in this issue.
Now, this would just apply to the part of that pipeline that goes through Standing Rock Sioux's territory, right?
Well, this is all through treaty territory. So this is all the pipeline is going about 500 yards, about 500 yards or so, or north of the boundaries of the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. But it's within the 1851 treaty territory of the Great Sioux Nation, in which the Hunkpapa and Standing Rock are part of that. And so it's a much bigger issue when it comes to that's why all these other tribes have a party in it too, not just Standing Rock.
Right,
is because a treaty is what binds us together.
And so then what will come from the Army Corps' statement? What do you think the next step will be? Will they bring members of various tribal nations involved to the table with Energy Transfer Partners, which is a company doing this? Could this be the beginning of the end of the Dakota Access Pipeline, or is that being too optimistic?
I mean, I think that the fact that we have costed, that the water protectors and the tribe's legal strategy and the political strategies that have been taking place, they have costed the company $100 million to date. and have messed up their timeline. And if we continue to drag this out and we continue to have resistance against the Dakota Access Pipeline until January 1st, it opens the door for a bunch of the companies to have the legal right to get out of the project. And so part of this is a political strategy to make sure that indigenous rights are honored in the future and honored in this project, but also it's a part of a delaying game. The further that we delay out this project, the more financial risk that the company has, and the more that its investors get nervous. And so that's why you're starting to see bank actions around the country that against banks and lenders.
I understand Wells Fargo is one that people have particularly targeted.
Yeah, Wells Fargo is a big one because they're one of the gap lenders, gap financiers of the project.
And there have been also solidarity protests happening in cities around the country just in the past week alone. I mean, there have been, of course, solidarity actions for many months now, but it seems as though those actions have ramped up in the past couple of weeks, which has been very heartening to see, even if the major media are not giving it enough coverage. What do you make of these solidarity actions? How important are they?
I think they're really important. I mean, on the National Day of Action, there was actions in all 50 states. And several countries around the world.
And that was just after the election, right?
Yep, it was just right after the election. And part of it is showing that this is a broader movement. Like people around the world see this as a human rights issue. People around the world that see if this can happen in America, this can happen on Indian reservations in America, this can happen in communities all across the world. And so that we need to stand together and have solidarity and stand powerfully together. And so as we start seeing these actions, it becomes more and more an issue that everybody can relate to. Because even though indigenous people have been leading this struggle, the Missouri River and its tributaries give water to 17 million Americans. And so the stance that indigenous people are taking right now is not just for our sacred lands, not just for our sacred water, but for the sacred water and the sacred lands for millions of Americans and their future generations too.
How important, Nick, is it for President Obama to take action between now and the end of his tenure before the next president takes office?
I think it's really, really important. I think that we have to find a way to relay messages to the president to take action on this. The White House staff is very abreast of this issue. They've been receiving updates. I think that President Obama is really receptive to the issue. He's a process president. He's been very dedicated and committed to process. And so some of these deeper discussions that have been happening have been about how do we create a better process so that tribes don't keep getting their rights violated. And I think that if we can come up with a solution how to do that, the president could act on this. I think that the president has heard Native leaders loud and clear that although he has been a great president for Indian country, that this Dakota Access Pipeline issue and stopping it, this is a legacy thing of how Indian people and Indian nations and nation and tribal nations throughout the country are going to look at what kind of legacy Obama has made and left. And so I would say that Obama's legacy to Indian country is at risk right now, depending on how he acts on this issue.
Well, Nick, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Best of luck to you in the coming months.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Nick Tilson is the executive director of Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation and a member of the Oglala Lakota tribe. He's been in North Dakota on the front lines of the indigenous-led resistance to the Dakota Access Pipeline. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can sign up for our newsletter at risingupwithsonali.com to get daily emails with links to all our stories.